യോഗേന ചിത്തസ്യ പദേന വാചാം മലം ശരീരസ്യ ച വൈദികേന യോപാകരോത്തം പ്രവരം മുനീനാം പതഞ്ജലിം പ്രാഞ്ജലിരാനതോസ്മി സ്തുവേ പതഞ്ജലിം വ്യാസം ശങ്കരം ച മുനിത്രയം കർത്തൃസൂത്രസ്യ ഭാഷ്യസ്യ കർമാവിവരണസ്യ ച. So we are continuing discussion of a very, very interesting and very important part of the Yoga Sutras. In fact, this has a great relevance to even the practitioners of Hatha Yoga. So maybe so it requires a little more discussion. The sutra we were dealing with in the last session was Prachardana Vidharanabhyam Vapranasya. This is the sutra. As I mentioned, the meaning of the sutra is this. There is another method for enjoying, experiencing mental tranquility, and that is through pranayama, expulsion and retention of breath. So this is a simple meaning of the sutra. Now, we have to remember, we are continuing the same discussion, the same topic. From previous sutra, we have already understood that there are some antarayas, and then there are some accompanying problems we discussed. Psychological lethargy, laziness, illness, maybe lack of confidence, and reaching a dead end when you practice spiritual life. At some point, you have a strong doubt whether this is really going to be meaningful or not. If you start praying, if you start meditation, after traveling some distance, we will have some doubts. And also, lack of confidence, lack of stability, all this we discussed, which Patanjali calls antarayas, we discussed already. Vyadhi, sthyana, samshaya, pramada, alasya, aviradi, bhrandi darsana, and so on. So bhrandi darsana, I have to explain a little, because you come across that particular phenomenon very often. The feeling that you have got some special vision, hearing a sound within the mind, you are seeing light, and so on. Now, this is one example of bhrandi darsana. Modern psychiatrists may consider this as kind of aberration. Now, if these experiences are accompanied by a stability of mind, a kind of deep inner peace, then it is genuine. But it is not, if it is not accompanied by inner peace and tranquility and a feeling that, well, we are reaching a goal, we have done something we should do, if a feeling of a kind of inner contentment, deep, intense contentment, if that experience comes, then there is no doubt that it is genuine. So this is a very interesting point, remember. We already discussed Chitta Prasada is the goal. Chitta Prasada means a complete inner tranquility, peace, a kind of effortless joy within. That's what everyone is looking for. Even the material world, people work hard for making money to attain success, thinking that that will give them a kind of a feeling, a kind of inner fulfillment. It doesn't happen, though intellectually we know that this may not happen, still in real life situations we forget this fact and we continue working for material prosperity or worldly enjoyments, thinking that this will give us inner contentment. So there is, on the one hand, there is an intellectual understanding that this is not going to happen. On the other hand, there is an emotional incapacity to come into terms with this reality. So that's why mind prompts us to move in one direction, though we know it is not the right direction. So this conflict happens, and this is due to antaraya, certain deep-rooted obstacles related to previous life cycles, experiences, and so on. And then Patanjali gave one important method. These problems can be solved by meditating on one single ideal. Meditation on a single principle. So that sutra, 32nd sutra, tat padishedartham ekadattva abhyasa kartavyaka. Kartavyaka is not in the sutra, it should be added. The commentators add the extra word. So in order to avoid this kind of obstacles and obstructions and difficulties, we must practice meditation on a single principle, which means work for a single ideal, some noble goal, noble ideas. So that's one method which Patanjali has recommended. Now, there is an alternate method that is recommending in the 34th sutra. In the 34th sutra, he says, we can practice, we can do some breathing exercises. That is the implication of the 34th sutra. So there's some practical method. Practicing of regular breathing. So even if you get excited, if you're tired, if you sit for some time, the breathing system becomes regular, you become kind of stability. So stability and steadiness are somehow linked to regular breathing. So if you can regulate your breathing, make your breathing regular, that will translate into stability. It is not a very, 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 it is not a very direct method. Patanjali is using a mechanism, a method. If regular breathing is an indication of mental steadiness, then if you can somehow artificially, attain stability in breathing, then can it help us to attain mental stability? That's why it is said, it is only indirect method. Pranayama is not a direct and not a 100% scientific method for mental stability. This is an important point, remember, when Patanjali won't admit it. It helps you to attain something else, which in its turn will help you to attain mental stability. So pranayama will help you to conserve your energy, focus your energy in one direction, to organize the energy resources in one direction. But it itself cannot help us to attain the highest goal unless we have already gone through all the earlier disciplines. So that's why Patanjali recommends Yama, Niyama, Asana, these three stages. Yama, Niyama are some very important universal moral ethical disciplines. Non-violence, purity of life, and total freedom from greed, from desire for other people's properties or things which do not belong to you, inner contentment, and then feeding the mind with spiritually healthy ideas. All these should be practiced, and then the ability to sit steady in a steady posture for a long time. That's asana, not the multiple physical postures, but all these postures are meant to enable us to keep the body in a shape and form so that the body will not be an intruder, body will not be a problem. To keep the body in a state of equilibrium and health, So that the body will not create any obstacles in our spiritual life. That's the only purpose of asana. Then only pranayama is recommended. Otherwise, pranayama can have the opposite result. And that is again another important point, remember. Pranayama can be a source of trouble if one starts practicing this without going through these early disciplines. This is an important point to remember. So that's why before pranayama is recommended in the 34th sutra, Patanjali talks about certain methods, certain principles, certain ways of dealing with external circumstances. So, you know, in the 33rd sutra, Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, Ubayakshanam, Sukadukha, Punya, Apunya, Vishayanam, Bhavanataha, Chitta, Prasadaram. How to attain mental steadiness, stability, and peace, and happiness. So, he says, you should have a friendly attitude towards other fellow human beings. You should have a sense of compassion and sympathy for those who are less fortunate. And again, you should be able to enjoy, you should be able to congratulate, you should be able to share the joy with others when they prosper, when they succeed, even when they go beyond you, when they go ahead of you. And also, the ability, the discerning wisdom to keep a long distance from people whose association could create distractions and conflicts in our mind. So these are the disciplines to be followed in our everyday life. It's very interesting. If you just analyze the characteristics of people whom you meet in your office or workplace or anywhere, you won't find anybody who doesn't belong to any of these four categories. There are those who are just like you, good-natured people who are interested in spiritual life, who are interested in spiritual ideas and so on. So you should have friendly association with them because that would be mutually beneficial. Then there are those who are not so fortunate, who want to learn many new wonderful things, but you got a chance, they didn't get a chance. You should have a sense of sympathy. And there are those who are ahead of you, who are more advanced than you. You should not feeling jealous or feeling envy for them. We should be able to experience joy, sincere inner joy, when you find somebody who is superior to you, who is ahead of you. That's not a very easy thing to attain, of course. And then, in order to be able to practice these three disciplines, this is a very important principle to remember. We should not closely associate with anybody whose association could create conflicts or distractions in our mind, doubt and skepticism. The people whose association may take us away from our own spiritual path. They can create doubts, skepticism, conflicts in our mind. And so we should not befriend them and we should not keep away from them. So this is the one. You should not have strong dislike and you should not have strong liking either. Because both can be equally a source of distraction. So after this, he mentioned this pranayama. We are going to deal with in detail in today's class. So the word uses prachardana. So it means to exhale. So prachardana vidharana abhyam va pranasya. In real practice, what this implies is not elaborate, complicated pranayama exercises that people learn in yoga studios or yoga camps, not at all. Patanjali doesn't recommend those things. Patanjali is not against, because these methods developed during the post-Patanjali period. The books which are considered to be authentic texts on physical yoga postures and breathing exercises. These books were written at a later period, during a later period, maybe after 2,000 years after Patanjali's work. So there are three important books, Gheranda Samhita, Hatha Yoga Pratipika, and Shiva Samhita. These are three. There are quite a few more, but these are some of the most important books where there is an elaborate description of different yogic postures and, of course, also different kinds of breathing exercises. These breathing exercises, which are now being taught in different yoga camps, they evolved during the post-Patanjali era of the history of yoga. So he is not referring to that. What he says is this: breathing in and breathing out. This is what he says. Now, in the process, there is also another process, retention is mentioned. So that's what he's actually mentioned here. Expulsion and throwing in, throwing out, that is inhalation and exhalation, which of course you cannot keep exhaling all the time, you know, you have to inhale. So he doesn't, that's why he mentioned only one item, you know. And then retention is mentioned here. That means keeping the breath within. So this is a simple method mentioned here. So perhaps without going further, I have to explain a few things with regard to pranayama, because people got into trouble, still do get into trouble through this method. So the sutra simply means throwing out and restraining breath. This is prana. This is one way to acquire mental peace. This is the simple meaning. Now, I mentioned earlier, and this is a very important thing I mentioned, this is not an absolute guarantee or absolute method. And this could even be dangerous. Suppose people take alcohols and drugs and start doing this. Their excitement, breathing becomes irregular. Energy multiplies. It could lead to bipolar problems. You know, lot of energy, excitement, followed by its opposite. It could lead to temporary manic manifestations, of course, followed inevitably by depression. So this could happen. That's why Patanjali very significantly recommended that one should get established himself or herself in the 10 fundamental disciplines at the beginning itself, that is yamas and niyamas, which we already discussed any number of times in this session. Of course, we may discuss perhaps on Sunday also when we discuss the value of significance of spiritual values in information technology age. It's an important thing. So that's a very important thing. Nervous system gets excited. Some of the nadis, I do not know what English word can be used to explain that. Nervous system may be one distant translation of this. So this nervous system will bear the brunt of impact when you practice extreme types of breathing exercises. Some of the nervous systems which are normally functioning can become hyperactivated, which can lead to extreme manic or bipolar problems, you know, extreme energy. And some of the nervous system which normally function at a very low level can be made active. So when nervous system gets hyperactivated, energy increases. But that energy it's not a creative, constructive force. It's just like, you know, if you have a narrow canal where a thin stream of water is flowing and you link it to a mighty ocean, you know what happens? The narrow canal, the stream will be completely destroyed because it loses identity. So that's what happens. So that's why these energies and heat generated by breathing exercises should be diverted to creative channels and should be prevented from flowing into destructive or negative channels. And this is done through the practice of these 10 important mental, moral disciplines called Yamaniyamas. Ahimsa, Satya, Asteya, Brahmacharya, Aparigraha, Shauja, Santosha, Tapaswadhyaya, Isra, Padithana. So non-violence, non-stealing, not having any desire, a sense of greed for things that don't belong to you, not desire for possessing what actually is not yours, and then not receiving too many gifts again, and also inner purity, external purity, internal purity, contentment, and feeding the mind with creative, constructive thought processes and ideas so that mind will be full of good impressions, good memories, and a kind of surrender to God, all this. These 10 disciplines, yamas and niyamas, will block the channels through which energy might or may flow into negative channels. That's why those who have not succeeded in practicing Yama Niyama, when they practice this pranayama, etc., either they will have a terrible fall. You know, the higher you fly, the lower you fall. You fall down with a big thud. Or you may become hypocrites. It could lead to profligacy. It could lead to extreme greed. It could lead to some undesirable characteristics. Because energy and heat are generated. So, energy and heat, that excites your ability to work, to think, to act, to speak. But all should be done after disciplining the mind through Yama Niyama. And this happens mostly through Kumbhaka, which is called retention. Kumbhaka actually means either breath can be retained within, it's called Antakumbhaka, or retained without, it's called Bahikumbhaka. So, Antakumbhaka, this is done in a way, this sort of, a little bit of this is done in some of the Far Eastern martial arts and also ancient Indian martial arts, because just to create energy. But then it's not too much of it, very little. So it doesn't have a spiritual dimension as such. So that's about pranayama. Now, another, as I mentioned earlier, it should be repeated again, when a person practices pranayama, what happens, two dimensions of energy, the cosmic and the individual energy, they interact. Our breath is the individual, the finite dimension of prana. Prana means the sum total of cosmic energy operating the universe. It's a vital force that controls the whole universal, existence. And it also operates through our internal system, pranobana, vyanodana, samana, the same vital energy functions through pancha pranas. I'm not going to those details because there is no time to do that. What it means is this: the breath is only a very gross, a very finite, a very limited dimension of this cosmic energy that we call prana. So, in other words, the infinite cosmic energy projected into our level of consciousness of time, space and causation, and this body psychophysical mechanism is called breath. Shwasa, prashwasa in Sanskrit means where you breathe in and breathe out. But it's infinite dimension, universal dimension, the cosmic energy. So modern times, great exponents with a spiritual insight into many of these Indian philosophical concepts like Vivekananda have thrown some additional light into these things, because Vivekananda was equipped with the education of modern Western, he was equipped with the best fruits of modern Western education. And also, of course, he was steeped in our traditional scriptures and was a man of spiritual experience. So according to him, Swami Vivekananda says, what we call science itself is just trying to, whatever a scientist achieves is an attempt to force nature to reveal some of its secrets, some of its methods of operation. Rather, this prana, how it operates, either through love, gravitation, or relativity in modern times, of course. All these are different manifestations of the functions of this prana. So prana means cosmic energy. So in the sutra, those who are interested in analyzing the Sanskrit sutra, you can keep in mind, there is a word va. Va means or. It's an option. So it is a reference to the previous sutra. That's the view of great thinkers like Vijnana Bhikshu. Because in the previous sutra, in the 33rd sutra, Patanjali said, you know, practice of Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, Ubeksha, etc., you know, a kind of friendly feeling towards fellow spiritual seekers, the sympathy and compassion for those who are less fortunate, and in admiration for those who are superior to you, and of course keeping a long distance from people who may create distraction in your mind. These are some of the methods that Patanjali recommends as tools for interacting with the external world, different types of persons, in the 33rd sutra. And this 34th sutra, or another way of attaining, another method to attain internal peace is pranayama. That's the implication of the word va, means or. Now we are going to the next sutra. Those who are interested, I can also deal with some of the great insights, very, very deep-rooted flashlights into the sutra that you find in the Yoga Vartika of Vijnana Bhikshu, who wrote a commentary on Vyasa's commentary. So, Vijnana Bhikshu was a great commentator. According to some scholars, he was a Buddhist. Buddhists were great practitioners of the yoga. That's why, you know, Yogacara, the Vijnanavadi schools, Buddhism, you know, they practice this yoga in a big way. So, Vijnana Bhikshu says, Nanu chittasya prasadakhi parikarmenaiva kim karimithi agangshaya maha prasannamiti prasannam chitta megagram bhutva sthirapadam abhramshayogyadam labhadeityarthaka sthidipadamiti padhisthidi sthairimityarthaka evam sarvatra. I'm reading fast because you don't have a book with me. Of course, Vijnana Bhikshu's book you don't have with me. So that's why I'm reading fast. But I try to give an analysis of this. So he writes in simple Sanskrit. Simple may not be simple for you, of course. But I'm trying to explain. What he says is, the subject for discussion in these sutras is prasannata. So, prasannam chittam. Prasanna means, chittam means mind. And prasanna means, it is in a state of permanent tranquility and peace and contentment and steadiness and stability. Which means it is not seeking anything, established in a kind of its own contentment. That is prasanna. It is not satisfaction. It is not, well, I have got it, now I'm very happy. Not that kind of external happiness. When you reach a stage of mental stability and peace and tranquility, when you feel there is nothing more for you to seek, you already reach a stage. where there is nothing more for you to aspire for. Like, a spiritual experience. That state is called prasannata. So prasannam chitta means a mind which has reached that stage. So one important characteristic of such a mind is that person will be able to use his mind as a strong weapon, an effective tool to do whatever he wants to do. And this is natural for an advanced yogi. Yogi, not hatha yogi, please remember that, not somebody who practices external physical postures, who practice yogic spiritual practices. So, as I mentioned this earlier, normally when we work with our mind, when we write a book, when you do cooking, when we do driving, whatever may be, our mental energies could be diverted into so many different channels. When we are thinking about something other than what we are focused on, then that shows the mind is diverted. Part of the mind has gone in that direction. When we see an object, visual object, part of the mind will be flowing to that visual object. When we hear a sound, then part of the mind will be flowing to the object from which the sound is coming. And if you smell something, then mind will go. So all the five senses will steal a bit of mental focus. Now this distraction is totally absent when you reach this prasannam chittam. That's what Vijnana Bhikshu says. Prasannam chittam egagram bhutva sthirapadam abhramsha yogyadam labhade iti arthaha. That means, what this purification means is this. The mind becomes pure and calm and becomes one-pointed. It reaches a point where it doesn't lose its steadiness, stability. So that's what it means. And in fact, to drive home this point, Vijnana Bhikshu, the great commentator, who wrote a commentary on Vyasa's commentary, he quotes a very important verse from Bhagavad Gita. Ragadvesha vyuktaistu vishyani indriyescharan atmavishir vidheyatma prasadam adhigichadi prasanna chedoso hyasu buddhi paryavadishthade, etc. These are some of the verses that it's from the second chapter when Lord Krishna gives a list of the characteristics of a spiritually enlightened person. He gives a list of the natural traits and characteristics of a spiritually enlightened person. So what Vijnana Bhikshu refers to is the statement from the Gita. A person who reaches this kind of mental stability, he attains peace, he becomes self-controlled, he approaches the subject with the senses of love and hate. It means mind will allow you to do whatever you are doing with full focus. So mind becomes fully focused. So when you read a book, or when you read a book or a sentence with that mind, you won't forget it again. Because when you are reading, when your eyes were focused on that sentence, the whole mental energy was focused exclusively on that particular sentence and the meaning of it. So it remains registered in the mental system. On the other hand, when we read that book, we are also concerned with something else. Then we may remember, but we may not be able to remember for a very long time. So all the energy resources of the human psychophysical system gets controlled and focused in one direction. So that is the speciality of power of concentration. But this kind of concentration is not just a mechanical efficiency, remember. There are people, there are nations, there are races in the world who have been trained in a paradigm of life, paradigm of perfection, in whatever they do. So those countries, those nations have progressed a lot in science and technology, with discipline. What you call kind of perfectionism is called. But in those countries, as I mentioned some time back, you know, the suicide rate is the highest. After doing hard work, putting all the energy resources in whatever they are doing, reaching the very high level of industrial progress, they come and take medicine for depression. See, kind of Kantian concept of perfectionism, you know. Kant also spoke about this, you know, in the Critique of Practical Reason, where it's a kind of duty, highest philosophical definition of duty for its own sake. Perfectionism, efficiency. They are able to focus the whole attention, again, relatively, not whole in the yogic sense, in the ordinary professional sense, whole energy and focus on whatever they do. So they reach a very high level of industrial progress, technological progress, but then people don't enjoy anything within. So that's why, you know, this Vijnana Bhikshu quotes this verse. They're able to focus on whatever they are doing without hatred or love, without any much attachment. Attachment means obsessive liking, obsessive binding attachment to something, slavish attachment, or hatred, the opposite of it. So if one can reach this level of concentration without extreme attachment, it is easy for you to concentrate on something which you are interested in, which you love to do. See, professional footballers can play football with great attention. They like it. They won't be able to do anything else with the same level of concentration. So it in such a... In that kind of concentration, there is no freedom. There is misery rather. A child who is obsessed with watching the TV, if the parents tell them, no, you close down, the child feels miserable. So he has attention, but if there is no freedom, you switch off this TV and he is in misery. So there is no freedom in that kind of thing. But a yogi is able to focus his whole attention into what he is doing with full freedom. That's why, you know, രാഗദ്വേഷ വിയുക്തൈസ്തു വിഷയാനീന്ദ്രിയേശ്വരൻ ആത്മവശ്യ വിധേയ ആത്മപ്രസാദം അധികരിച്ചതി. സോ സച്ച് എ യോഗി അറ്റെയിൻസ് പീസ്, ഹി സെൽഫ് കൺട്രോൾഡ്, ആത്മവശ്യ വിധേയ ആത്മ, ആൻഡ് ഹി ഇസ് ടോട്ടലി ഫ്രീ ഫ്രം എക്സ്ട്രീം ലൈക്കിംഗ് ഫോർ സർട്ടൻ തിങ്സ് ഓർ എക്സ്ട്രീം ഡിസ്ലൈക്ക് ഫോർ സർട്ടൻ തിങ്സ് ബിക്കോസ് ഹിസ് സെൻസസ് ആൻഡ് മൈൻഡ് ആർ അണ്ടർ ഹിസ് ഓൺ പെർഫെക്റ്റ് കൺട്രോൾ. ആൻഡ് ദ പോയിന്റ് ഈസ് he is always established in a kind of inherent tranquility and peace. And this is a characteristic of a Siddha Prajna, which is called spiritually enlightened, realized person. That's the quotation from Vijnana Bhikshu. So that's the 34th verse. If you have got anything to ask, you can ask later. Now we go to the 35th sutra. The sutra is Vishayavati va pravritti utpanna manasa sthiti nibandhini. The word va is found here, those who are reading this sutra. You know, va means or. It's an option. Otherwise, another method is recommended. Extrasensory perception having. So it deals with something else that you have to remember. Extrasensory perception having arisen, it becomes the cause of steadiness of mind. This deals with some experiences that a yoga practitioner may encounter during different levels of his yogic concentration. For example, those who reach this level of one-pointedness, extreme concentration, they are able to see and hear and smell and taste things which are apparently otherworldly, apparently. The point is, the senses reach a level of concentration where the senses are able to perceive and experience things which are not normally perceived or experienced at the ordinary empirical level. Again, you know, these are only certain byproducts, certain natural byproducts or just certain things that we encounter on our way towards higher spiritual goals. This is not yoga, this is not a goal of yoga. This could happen, that's what it means. This is what happens, you know. When you focus your eye on one thing, you're able to reach that level of transcendental concentration. On the one hand, at very empirical level, you are able to focus your whole mind on the visual object. Or you're able to focus your whole mind on the audio object. Or you are able to focus your whole mind on what you taste. Like that, so all the sensory perceptions reach a kind of transcendental dimension. So that's what is discussed here. Before that, the commentator quotes one very interesting verse from another old, not so famous, but one obscure yoga text, which is very relevant in this context, just before he enters the subject, by introducing the subject. The verse is, De bije chitta vrikshasya pranaspandana vasane egaspin stayo kshine kshipram dve abhinasyataka prana nirodhe indriya vritti indriya vritti nam nirodhe prana vritti nirodha. It's a very interesting, I shall try to explain this. I thought I will quote this, recite this verse, because it is very interesting how this is linked to what we are going to discuss in the 35th sutra. So through pranayama, you are, as I mentioned, you are connecting yourself with the infinite. Our breath, our pranas functioning in our internal psychophysical mechanism in the form of what you call vital force, vital energy, prana, is the cosmic energy limited, confined to the frame of time, space and causation. The cosmic energy, the transcendental, all-pervading energy, when it functions through this limited framework of time, space and causation, it is called pancha pranas. What is time, space and causation in this context? How many years a human being can live? Maybe 100 years. And then the space, the limited space through which that cosmic energy functions in the human physical, psychophysical mechanism. And again, you know, it comes into existence at one point of time and it disappears at another point of time. The lifespan of human being. So it is limited by time, space and causation. Now, we are trying to connect this individual prana functioning within our own psychophysical mechanism. We are trying to connect it to the infinite, timeless, spaceless, transcendental, all-pervading cosmic energy. So when we try to do that, what happens? The individual prana is restrained, and then that prana is taken beyond its limited function through the senses, indriyas, and then it is linked to the infinite, and that helps us to understand our own infinite dimension. A human being is not a psychophysical mechanism that comes into existence, eats food, enjoys life for several decades and disappears beyond and beneath this psychophysical mechanism. There is this infinite possibility, this beyond and behind this limited breath of prana that is operating within us. There is the infinite cosmic prana, and once we understand, we identify ourselves with the infinite reality, infinite dimension of our own being. So now the next one is, he says, in the process, while trying to reach this level of this progress, certain things happen to our senses and mind. And those events, those indications that happens to the senses and mind are explained in the 35th sutra. We'll discuss that in the next session. Now we can have interaction. You know, this is we have entered a subject which may appear to be somewhat removed, a bit occult-like, but once you understand, you find there is a whole science behind whole phenomena. Try to ask questions.
The word nadis?
Nadi, yeah.
Within Vedanta, is there association with the rivers of life that run in the human body, in the microcosmic reality of the human existence, that there's association with the nagas and the rivers and the nervous energy,
yeah,
which participates in the galactic, the cosmic?
You know, nadis are used in both medicine, Ayurvedic medicine is used, in yoga structure it is used. So, in Vedanta also, in the Upanishads of Saptanadya, seven nadis are used. But then in Indian school of medicine, there are any number of nadis. They touch your nadi to assess your, to diagnose your illness. So, there is a very gross dimension. But in the seven nadis mentioned in the Vedic literature, it's a very subtle thing. But here all that we, in a general way, what we can say is, we have to explain with the help of what is obvious. So all that we can say, and this of course is scientifically corroborated, when a person goes through extreme forms of physical exercises, like yogic postures, and of course much more, when he practices breathing exercises, the nervous system gets completely overwhelmed. I mean, it is just completely influenced. It is remodeled. The nervous system can become sattvic if done properly with discipline, or it could even be disturbed. So. When we talk about nadis in the yoga context, we have to refer to the nervous system. But the safest way to do that. And because nadi is used in the Upanishads also. And in the Vedas also, Saptanadya, seven nadis. So, but the nervous system is much bigger than seven. It's much more numerous. So all that we can say, it may be nervous points where, you know, when they are overactivated, it could lead to excitement, it could lead to... That you can, any doctor will tell you it is a fact. If an injection or something is given, you know, if something is pressed on the wrong nervous point, it could affect the body mechanism, it could affect health also. So, through pranayama, certain things could happen. Mostly, it happens in the form of excitement, nervous excitement. This is what happens. Because heat and energy are created. Before that, we must practice it in discipline so that this excitement awakening of new nervous functions will not have a disturbing effect on the mind. That's why, you know, it's mentioned earlier, if any of these experiences are accompanied by calmness and stability and steadiness, then it is genuine. If it is accompanied by excitement, it happens in many yoga studios, they don't go, in yoga camps it happens in India. It happens, there have been cases, when Swami Sivanandaji used to give warning to his disciples when the early decades of 20th century, when the Rishikesh Sivananda, Divine Law Society founded. So they had to follow disciplines in food, in associations, and many factors. It happens.
Is there a mystical body paralleling the physical corporal body?
There is a, yeah. You know, we have the gross physical body, what you call sthula sharira, then we have a subtle body. Subtle body is nothing but internal organs. Subtle body doesn't have a form. The word subtle, what you call sukshma, itself shows it is non-physical. It is not visible as the physical body is visible. See, our character is nothing but an aspect of a subtle body. Our subtle body, it consists of our mind, intellect, ego system, and accumulated memories, impressions all together, which together constitute our inner personality. So a human being's personality minus his physical form is subtle body. If you want to know a clear definition, understanding of what subtle body is like, you see a human being, what is visible, we call him his personality. His height or weight or whatever it is. But what he actually is much beyond, much deeper than how he appears to your eyes. And what doesn't appear to your eyes, and what he actually is as a human being, is a subtle body. That's why sukshma sharira is called sukshma, means subtle. Sharira means body. Nothing but our mind, how our emotions and attitude function, different kinds of fluctuating mental thought currents, sankalpa, vikalpa, this way or that way, all this. And the desiderative faculty, deciding faculty, determinative faculty, intellect. And then I am the one, I am, this is my name, is this and this person. And the accumulated tendencies, impressions, vasanas, vrittis, which we have accumulated, we have been accumulating for the last several thousands of years, maybe from many cycles of life. In fact, that's how we react to certain things. How we react to certain things, not on the basis of the physical body. See, when you have to enter a small room, if you are a 6-7 feet fellow, 7 feet tall man, you have to crouch, you have to come down. That's okay. That's a physical body. But that first personality is only a very insignificant changing phenomenon. It cannot exist more than 100 years. But the real subtle personality of yours, it's accumulated so many impressions and vrittis. How you react to a situation, how you react to yourself, that's subtle body. In fact, that is personality. So when we talk about sukshma sharira, you know, the Viveka Chudamani on different books give beautiful definitions and descriptions. But if somebody asks, what is sukshma sharira? The real personality of a human being is sukshma sharira. And the real personality is certainly it goes far beyond the physical personality of a person. That's the idea.
Swamiji, you talked about yoga, exercise. Yeah. So what kind of exercise should one do to do pranayama?
Excuse me?
What kind of exercise should one do, physical exercise, to do pranayama correctly?
No, the one, if a person can do enough exercises, physical exercises, to be able to sit in an effortless manner without for a long time and meditate, then the person is fit for doing that. The Patanjali doesn't recommend or doesn't speak about different forms of pranayamic exercises. For so far as he is concerned, it is only a tool, a method to attain mental stability, tranquility. Pranayama and asana together will help you to be able to sit quiet for a long time in a very effortless manner, in which the body or mind doesn't announce their presence to you. Your asanas are designed to make the body healthy enough so that the body doesn't complain, body doesn't become an obstacle. Body doesn't create antaraya, as mentioned, obstacles mentioned earlier. And also mind. So once we reach that level of physical and mental health, then one can progress next stage. So that's why in the whole Ashtanga, moral, ethical discipline, physical discipline, and spiritual discipline. All these are involved here in this discipline. So a very, very elaborate scientific system. Which idea?
Swami, I have one question. So, how to overcome deep-rooted obstacles?
How to?
Hello, you can hear me. Yeah, how to overcome deep-rooted obstacles?
Yeah, Patanjali himself elsewhere says by resignation to God.
Sorry?
If this kind of surrender to God.
God. Mm-hmm.
Depending upon, there are people who may not be able to believe in God. For such people, even the psychological analysis will help them to understand. But those who have faith in God, a kind of, somehow to link whatever we do, whatever we speak, whatever we think to a higher spiritual ideal. That's the way to do that.
But in some cases, like Swami Vivekananda said, like you are the creator of your destiny. So in that case, how can we...
This is how we create our destiny. In fact, this discipline also is given in the yoga system. We create our destiny. How do we create the destiny? Through going through these disciplines. Okay. Vivekananda himself, how he built his own destiny. He had to learn from his teacher, Sri Ramakrishna. And he had to practice many of these disciplines we are discussing here. That's how he built it. That's what he wants you to build the destiny. Building the destiny. Sometimes, these great ideas we take and we think, we look upon it as some sort of a distant something we believe in. So I've heard people... very flamboyantly asserting Vivekananda said, and as if they're something the slogan. So Vivekananda gave a very practical, very scientific, very step-by-step method. And this is one of it, in fact. He wrote a commentary on this Yoga Sutras. Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, all these are different methods. So it is not, he was not just giving a brief proclamation for which you cannot reach, which you cannot touch with your hand. It is something that we can reach, we can build our destiny through these practices. That's what he said.
Yes.
It's a very realistic method. Okay, thank you. So, Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Pranamastu.